Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewatchable Episode 115, where we're covering The Legend of Korra Episode 9, Out of the Past, and 10, Turning the Tides. My name is Caitlin. I am not one of your regularly scheduled hosts, but we'll make do. I am joined by superfan Mitch and newbies Karen and Ariana. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So, before we get started, we have our contact information if you want to get in touch with us. Just a reminder, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find us on this post at hypable.com and on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So, that didn't start out flawless. All right. So, shall we get started with Episode 9, Out of the Past, and all the
Can
feels?
We? Oh, yeah. We need feels. To do this. I'm so happy that we're on with Karen and Ariana for this, because, well, any newbie, actually. I think I'm sad that Brittany's not here, because this is, like, such a monumental moment for them. So, like, I think I've dreamed about this moment ever since we started Korra. This is so cool.
So, this is Mitch's dream. Fantastic. All right, so our synopsis. Thank you, Ariana, ahead of
it's
time.
It's okay, because Brittany, like, wrote all over the synopsis, so it's fine. We'll have her input.
Fantastic. Okay, awesome.
I haven't read this ahead of time, so this should be fun.
Oh, yeah.
So, Out of the Past. In this chapter, Lin saves the world and lets Tenzin tag along, and also Korra's friends are there, even though they're basically useless. They find the metalbenders who can't metalbend anymore, but not Korra because she's busy having Deus Ex Machina visions. Turns out, not dead Sokka, Toph, and Aang battled Amon back in the day when he was an evil bloodbender, but then it was fine because Aang used his turtle magic to stop him, and he didn't even need his wife's help because even though this area is her forte, she had better things to do, like raise his non-airbending children for him. Okay, so Korra knows the secrets of the war now, and she saves herself and finds her friends, and Mako totally smothers her in front of Asami like a troll, but it's fine, girl, looks like a Victoria's Secret model, can definitely do better than a homeless man who probably drowns himself in Axe.
There it is. That's Vadiana, I know.
So,
oh,
that
I'm
was
crying.
The episode. So.
Oh god, that was great.
Yeah, that was good. Thank you, Ariana.
Did you say this like wasn't good? Like, I don't understand. I don't think you know how like good you are at writing these. You kill me every time.
So, starting with the episode, we open with Tarlok giving his version of events of what happened the night before, and he says that the Equalists attacked, and they took Korra, and he got electrocuted, even though we see that he did it to himself. So what did we think of Tarlok's cover story?
Slime ball.
It was just, like, it didn't make sense, and I don't know why everybody didn't just, like, I was like, really, you guys believe him? He's been totally, like, so terrible this whole time, and Tenzin and Lin both don't like him. Then he's like, oh yeah, so Korra was here and they took her, but they just electrocuted me. Like, they didn't even take away my bending or anything. They just left me alone. Like, that makes no sense. But
yes,
fine,
because he's on the council, and of course they were the councilman alone. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, he's like, not I important.
I would have bought it only from how intense that burn looked that he gave himself from that electric glove. That, which is a very, like, I know I say this a lot, but like, that felt like such an adult thing to do. And it was terrifying, like, seeing him do it. It was just like, ah, ooh.
I mean, I kind of get why they believed him, because they wouldn't want to believe that he's been doing the things that he's doing. But from the beginning, you could tell he was such a slime ball. And so I think that it should have came sooner than this, but I get why they've been sort of holding off and really accusing him of anything significant.
I mean, come on, three ponies, can you trust him?
Three ponies. It takes someone who's pretty committed to electrocute themselves, too. So that's pretty intense slime bending to
it
electrocute
does.
Yourself.
It does. You know what? He actually reminds me of a really good Scream villain from the Scream 4 movies. Karen, I don't think you watched it yet.
No.
But there's a very similar scenario, if anyone's seen it. And it's absolutely just as horrifying, I think I could say. That's probably why I found it so disturbing. I'm sure if anyone else knows what I'm talking about, you would probably be, like, cringing right now.
And Frant, awkward silence. Okay.
No one else is a Screen fan quite yet. I'm trying to get Karen on that boat. You'd be surprised by how awesome that series is and how much you can relate it to other series, too. It's amazing.
We've got Lin and Tenzin putting aside their sexual Tenzin, ha ha ha, to work together. So, Ariana is really interested in how Lin and Tenzin can work together despite their past. Do you want to elaborate?
I just find their relationship, like, fascinating. It's like this weird cross between, like, cousins and obviously, like, ex-lovers. But I think, like, I really liked in this episode how finally they, like, stopped bickering and they're like, look, like, we don't trust anybody else. Like, let's get Korra back. But I think it is interesting that, like, as the gang's kids, they probably grew up together. And so it is kind of like a weird relationship, like family. Like, how sometimes you may not like your cousin, but, like, if your brother got in a car accident, you can call your cousin, even though they're super annoying, and they'll come help you. So I think their relationship is really fascinating to me.
Anyone else have thoughts?
I do. I apologize for the lawnmower in the background, which you could probably hear because, as you guys know, my landlord sucks. I really like their relationship too, and I also find it fascinating, especially because it's so obvious that they still like each other. And it's amazing to me that they've broken up and that Tenzin has moved on, and yet he still cares for Lin so much. And I really need to know the story behind that.
No comment, Karen.
Yeah, no comment, guys.
No comment, and this is fun. I really like thinking back to the moment in the pro bending arena where, just like old times, of course, my old friend, I love that relationship, and I love that it comes through here again. It makes my heart sing. And Pema is the homewrecker here, Ariana. You've hit it head on the nail. Oh, wait, did I say it right that time?
I mean, we can talk
nail
about
on
this
the
more
head.
In the next episode. Like, this is, like, all of the next episode, which is why I was so obsessed with it. But, like...
Oh, fabulous, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I have theories.
But I think everyone...
I'm sure Karen does too.
Hmm?
I said I have theories. I'm sure Karen does too.
For real. And I just have to give a good kudos to, I think it was the last week's episode, where, you guys had such a good chemistry. I think that we're, like, building off of such a high momentum right now. I don't know how we're going to live up to last episode, because you just did such a killer job on Last Rewatchable. It was so much fun.
Well, thanks. So, from extension of Lin and Tenzin, there's all the grown-ups in general in the show, and there's a lot of focus on the adults in this show, which is kind of different from Avatar, which was all focused on the kids, and this one has kind of a split focus between the adults and the new Team Avatar. So what are we thinking about the dynamics of the adults and the kids? Ariana?
Well, I'm kind of, like, curious to see what Karen thinks, because I feel so bad, but I care, like, 0% for the kids. Like, the only one that even interests me a little bit at this point is Asami. Like, I just feel like they don't do anything. They're so useless. Or even when they try and help, they just, like, make things worse usually. So, but they're just, like, not, I don't know, they're not interesting to me, like Mako and Bolin, because I feel like Bolin was meant to be the Sokka, but Sokka, like, did other stuff. You know, he was, like, a leader. He wasn't just funny. He was, like, the strategist. And Bolin is just kind of there, like, as Brittany said, with Pabu, like, hi, guys, like, the little airbending kids do more than they do.
Oh, my God. That is so true, though. Like, so true. I feel very similarly. I really love the adults. I think it's so interesting that we're focusing so much on the adults, because in Avatar, it was very much the kids. And I think kids watching the show can relate to that. And obviously, they did it as, like, yes, you're a kid, but you can save the world, too. Like, you have powers, not superpowers, but you have the power to do those things to make changes. In this show, like, the kids are aged up, and also we're focusing on the adults a lot more. So I just kind of wonder if they realized that adults and young adults really liked Avatar, and they're sort of trying to speak to them too. And it's just a kind of different change in tone. But aside from that, I care about Korra, and I care about Asami, but yeah, Bolin and Mako, like, I really want to like Bolin, but it's just not, I'm not getting that connection yet. Mako, I'm so over Mako.
Oh my gosh, yes.
He's so annoying.
Can we just, like, skip to that point? Like, like, Brittany is also over Mako. I'm like, oh, I can't stand him right now. Like, yeah. Okay, so he, at the end when he's like, everybody, give Korra space, give her space, and then he just, like, totally smothers her and picks her up. Like, okay.
Well, so I think as super fans, Caitlin and I can speak for the fact that, yeah, of course, as the series grows on, you're going to feel more close to those brothers. But if you want to, like, I don't know, cheat your way there, you could easily watch their backstory. And it's not surprising. It's not anything you wouldn't expect. But it just gives you the feels just enough, I think. If you want to watch it online, there were, like, shorts they released in a different art style. And I think they were called Republic City Scruffle, if I'm not mistaken, Caitlin. Do you remember those?
No, I understand that they're, like, you know, plucky kids and that they, like, grew up in, you know, this, that they had a hard life growing up. I just feel like right now they're not being useful. Like, they could be taken out 100% from these two episodes and, like, nothing would change, really.
I know. And part of that is just, I think that they want to try and build the gang. And I feel that a lot of Korra has trouble creating that same gang because there isn't the same pressure, for instance, in this current storyline to really have them around. You're right. Like,
Other characters. I guess the gang didn't really, they were traveling always. So,
right. And then
they're not stuck on Appa together.
And this bigger cast of characters can really kind of muddle up all of what was supposed to be the most important anymore, which is a different show than Avatar. And I don't know if that's a bad thing. I find it to be okay after. I just had to come to terms with that. And that's probably the biggest difference from Atla that really hit me when I first watched Korra, but I'm okay, and I understand where you two are coming to this, you know, conclusion now that, like, oh wow, like, Mako and Bolin have no importance in this. It's like, yeah, that's kind of Korra. Sometimes it happens.
All right, so we've got useless teenagers, and they join Lin and Tenzin, and they go looking for Korra underground because they think that's where they're gonna find her, and they do some kind of spying and going underground, and they find Lin's metal benders, who cannot metal bend anymore. Amon took their bending.
So sad. Every time that happens, I'm just devastated, and I don't know if that's how everyone else reacts to, but, like, get really depressed about it, because I just think, like, what if somebody took something like that away from me? I would feel like, what's the point anymore? Because it's so ingrained in your life. I just,
like, your ability to speak, or even, I don't know, like, hear, right? From all the, like, podcasting we do or whatnot.
Well, yeah, I think it's, like, more than that, though. It's like my violin teacher, she, like, broke her hand and she couldn't play the violin for, like, a year. And it was, like, devastating for her. I feel like it's like that, you know, it's like the thing that makes you, you, or that.
Yes.
Benders definitely wrap part of their identity around their ability to bend. So it's like taking away part of how you identify yourself and see yourself.
And without their bending, what are they going to do? I mean, the law enforcement, they are metal benders. So if they don't have that ability, they have to change their entire lifestyle now. And I can't even comprehend that for them.
Well, I'm sure they get to stay on the force, but I feel like they're, like, Lin's metal benders were, like, a special unit. Like, like, they're called in for the big guns, you know? Like, they were, like, the Navy SEALs of the police.
Well, I find it interesting that the newbies are so convinced that, like, the bending is gone forever. I know we have some, like, Amon theory stuff, but where are we convinced that what Amon's doing is legitimately forever and that these benders will never gain it back? Like, this isn't just, like, a really strong form of chi blocking, for instance. I don't know. I just, I'm always very curious to see what a newbie would think about what Amon's doing and, like, how it's so permanent.
Thoughts?
I mean, I did think it was permanent to begin with, because they keep saying that it's permanent.
Yeah, but I just believe them.
Yeah, but by the end of the second episode, and I know we're really jumping ahead here, with Lynn's powers being taken away, I'm like, I don't know if I really believe it's permanent anymore. Because I just, maybe because I just, I'm in denial, and I don't want her to not be... I mean, she's going to be badass anyway, let's be real, but that's just devastating. So, I don't know. But yeah, I guess I'm with Ariana. I just, like, believed them when they said it was permanent.
That's so interesting you said that. I mean, I guess now I'm rethinking it. That never even occurred to me. Like, when Lynn got hers taken away, I thought it was permanent, and I just thought it was a good storytelling device because... Like, we saw how powerful she is in these episodes. Like, guys, she's, like, way more powerful than everybody.
Yeah,
she's, like, using her feet to, like, for echolocation. Like, but I just thought it was so interesting because I don't think, like, a lot of the people do wrap their, lives around their bending. Like, I feel like Korra does. And the guys who were the guys who got it taken away before, who were like the champions, they do. But I don't really feel like Lynn does. I think that she's maybe old enough that she's like her own person. And I think that she can define herself as Lynn without the metal bending. And I thought it would just be really interesting to see someone have to adapt to that and still be like a powerful person. I mean, like, look at the Powerpuff Girls. They didn't have bending except for Azula. And they did lots of cool stuff.
They didn't need it.
Lynn can do acrobatics, too, just like them.
I guess that's kind of the point of the Equalists, huh?
I literally thought you meant the Powerpuff Girls for, like, a split second.
Oh.
Wait.
I couldn't remember their names. Kylie and May.
I was like, how does this tie in? Okay. Totally back on track now.
It's funny, too, that... you two newbies are thinking a lot of the same lines that I did when I first watched the show, because as a newbie to Korra, just having watched Atla also, I remember having theories thinking like, okay, so maybe like they'll gather up like Katara or something and they'll have her like, you know, do her healing, because I know that we had Emo Bat Boy, leader of the prebending cheating team. Why am I forgetting his name? He used to be so important to me, Caitlin. That guy. Well, he was like, you know, I went to all the best healers in the town and no one could do it. I always had the impression that, like, you know, Korra's like, oh, I learned this from Katara. I learned how to heal. That Katara would be like, okay, I'm on this case. I'm going to get to work. Here we go. Like, we're going to fix you, Lynn. You know what I mean?
Katara apparently doesn't do anything anymore.
Yeah, apparently.
Which we can talk about later. I'm so frustrated, but...
Well, this ties well into... newbie theories on Amon. We can come back to the flashbacks in a bit, but what are you guys thinking about Amon and how he is able to take away bending if that's what he's doing permanently? Any thoughts?
I have a theory. Well, obviously Amon is that guy. I forget his name. Is it Jacone? Is that his name?
Is he really, like, are we meant to make that connection?
Oh, duh. I feel like he's totally that guy. He has to be. But, well, maybe not. I'm saying he is. This is my theory. So he's that guy. And then when I saw Aang take away his stuff with, like, the turtle magic, I was like, oh, maybe now he has, like, the turtle magic in him. And that's why maybe, like, when Aang died, like, his turtle magic became, like, not, like, he could use it on other people now. You know what I mean? Like, the thing that Aang did to him, now he can do it to other people.
But are you still on the, like...
like, in him.
Are you still on the, like, the voice decoder theory? Because, like, we have a voice for both of these actors now, like Amon and...
Oh, I feel like that doesn't matter. I mean, they have some Darth Vader stuff going on. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, I would have found that harder to believe in Atla, that there'd be two different voices, but I get where you're coming from in Korra now, that we have, you know, more technology.
It's been a lot of time. Time has passed. Voices change.
Right. Well, yeah, and that too. You're right. I mean, if you think about, like, even all of the gang that we're hearing now, I know that whenever I hear them, I'm very much looking forward to hearing, like, the same actors as adults, but it just, obviously, they're different actors, so it's like, oh, Aang, you sound nothing alike.
Karen, do you have any theories?
I don't know if I really believe that it's that one guy. I mean, he would have attacked his own son then, which, you know, hey, could happen, but I don't know. I'm still going with 200-year-old Fire Lord Ozai.
That's still pretty solid.
He could also have the turtle magic in him.
True.
Oh my god, you with these theories, they're great.
So we're thinking it all ties into the turtle magic. That seems to be what we're coming down to.
Well, yeah. Okay, for real, I think that we learned in Atla that when you take away somebody's bending, you have to be able to, like, overpower them. Like, your spirit has to be stronger than theirs. And so maybe this guy just learned it from somewhere else, but I think the fact that maybe he is so determined in his beliefs and so strong in his beliefs that he's able to do this without much trouble.
Mitch?
I have to say no comment.
That's, I will say,
when I was first watching it on First Watch, there was a lot of theorizing about how Amon could do it, and there was a lot of thinking about the chi blocking, since he employs the chi blockers, and whether this was a advanced form or permanent form of chi blocking, too.
You know what? I have a non-spoilerly, like, this is my theory from the beginning, so take this as it is, right or wrong. That I remember when I was watching that I was thinking that, yeah, kind of like we're talking turtle magic, that, yeah, Amon was born this fifth type of bending, this energy bender, as I think Phantom's dubbed it.
Ooh,
and maybe Breaker's dubbed
be
it.
Cool.
Right. And my theory was just that simply, you know how he kind of like dodges bending in a really obscure way? Like, you're like, what? Wait, how'd you do that? Well, that's energy, I suppose. So it would make sense that, to me, in this period of watching firsthand of Korra, that he was like moving the fire around him just enough to dodge it. And that was kind of like an all powerful type of bending, because I don't know if you can manipulate all the other forces, but you could definitely do stuff with energy other than just like taking away people's bending.
That actually makes a lot of sense, and especially in these episodes, we learned that there are other kinds of benders. Like, even with water benders, there are certain people who can blood bend, you know, and, like, there are different levels, I guess, within the different bending abilities. So if he's, like, a special kind of bender, it would make sense to introduce that idea this early on so that later, when it comes to fruition, we understand how that connection's made.
And energy bending, I feel like that could be connected to like fire bending.
Okay. Because of electricity and because that's kind of energy. Are we completely off of, I have to say no comment here. I had a really good theory, but I can't, it's one of those, if I theorize it about it, you'll know it's not true. So never mind. I'll let you guys hopefully come to your own conclusion here.
So we've got lots of possibilities floating around. So should we talk about the flashbacks?
Oh my god, yes, please.
Yes.
I'm already crying.
So Korra is stuck in her metal cage and she's got nothing better to do but meditate on the weird, like, split-second visions that she's been getting from Aang. And so she finally says, screw it, gonna do it, let's find out what Aang wants. And we get some extended flashback to when the gang is, like, in their 40s. Oh, my God. They're in their 40s, you guys.
Oh, my God.
They got really old. So, thoughts?
And they all look so good.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Like,
Aang is super hot. Like, I was not expecting that.
I was like, Katara, you did well. I'm, like, proud of you.
And I like how they're drawn in like a softer art style than Korra's harsher lines in like present day, because I think they look a lot more attractive. Like, if you compare it like Aang to Tenzin, I think the Aang just looks more sexy because of the way he's drawn, and then Tenzin looks just like harsh.
Oh, I like Tenzin too. Don't be mean to Tenzin. Tenzin's
like
sexy.
Don't get me wrong. Tenzin will have his sexy moments. He really will. Like,
Oh. So moving on from that, what do we think of how the gang is interacting now that we're seeing them in a grown-up setting and they're all professional and everything?
Guys.
We're all semi-professional.
Yeah.
I just want to cry because they have that same relationship that they did way back when, but they're like mature and they're adults and they're working together much easier. And it's just, it's really fulfilling. And I think I'm getting emotional. So
I know. It was so cute seeing like Aang is trying so hard to be serious and Toph is just like, haha, whatever, Aang.
Twinkle toes.
I love that interaction. And that's when I started to feel that, yeah, we don't have the same voice actors, but we definitely have the same personalities here.
And then Sokka, when he's like, he's supposed to be giving like the speech or whatever, like the sentence. And instead he goes on like this long rant about like, well, one time I saw Toph do like metal bending and that was really cool. And also I have a boomerang. And
Oh, man.
But don't those callbacks make it all the more grueling that you're watching them like now dead?
Sokka's dead.
Stop. I can't handle this.
No, I miss Sokka so much. Like, well, maybe because he's not, the only, like, why is he dead person.
Why is he dead?
He's confirmed to be dead. He's the only one that's confirmed to be dead, so I have, like, hope on the other ones. So right. Maybe that's why, like, I miss Sokka the most.
Yeah.
So,
sorry, Kaelin. I'll let you go ahead. I was just going to ask, who else do we think is still alive out of this group? And or who's
everybody
missing.
Else is still alive.
Okay, so you're convinced everyone's still
until
alive.
Until confirmed, I'm holding out hope.
Okay.
Until confirmed. That's probably the best way to go through it. Until we know for sure they have to be alive. Can't handle it otherwise.
Yes.
Holding on to that hope might hurt you even more.
Well, let's not think about Mitch's depressing thoughts there. So the actual storyline of the flashbacks is of this gangster Yacone, who has been essentially ruling the underground of Republic City, and he's been doing it by nefarious means, and they've never been able to pin anything on him the way it seems to be with gangsters all the time, that they find ways to wiggle out of it. So he's never been able to have anything pinned on him, and they finally have evidence to do it. So Aang joins Toph and they arrest Yacone, and he goes on trial for being a bloodbender. Thoughts? He's being a bloodbender?
I wasn't aware that bloodbending was illegal, so I'm, like, confused. Did they say that?
I think that's the implication there.
Well, no, did you say...
that this is, like, Sokka a new does. Thing, right?
You know it is. But Sokka implies that it happened within recent times by saying, like, it's been banned for decades. Not, like, it's been banned for millennia, you know? It's kind of, like, something had to have happened to make that happen, apparently.
What were you going to say, Karen?
I was just going to say that I'm really glad you put in here that you have conflicting feelings about the bloodbending, because I do too. And I was thinking really hard on this when I watched this episode, because I'm like, it's kind of, I guess I feel bad making any form of bending illegal, because you can't help what you can do. I think it's all in the way that you use it. And I think it's sort of like splitting hairs at this point, but at the same time, being able to bloodbend is a really terrible power to have in terms of like you can control other people, and I totally get why that would be so frightening to literally everybody else. But I don't know.
That's exactly how I feel, Karen, because I can see it's terrible. Like, the way Yacone uses it, it's horrible. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't want somebody with that kind of power. But then again, like you said, you can't control who you are. And I don't feel like that's fair. Because you could say the same thing about, like, firebenders or really, like, any kind of bending. Like, firebending is dangerous. That is really dangerous to have just people who can be, like, automatic arsonists and, like, blow things up, right? But... I mean, they don't make that illegal because there's a bunch of them. But bloodbenders, they're, like, very unique. I feel like maybe it would be more useful to have proper training and teach people to control it so that they don't use it in rage. Because I do think that there is a use for it. Like, for example, in the police force to control somebody without having to hurt them. it to just be like put handcuffs on them, that is useful.
I don't know if bloodbending ever doesn't hurt. It looks like it's pretty unpleasant.
That's what I was going to ask, actually, because I'm wondering if there would be a way to basically like freeze them without having them contort and everything. I mean, because it looks very painful and it's clear that it's intended to look that way on purpose. But I wonder, like Ariana was saying, with proper training, if there would be a way to just like hold somebody in place in order to put the handcuffs on them or something like that without it being painful.
I think it's worth remembering, though, that bloodbending isn't its own thing. It's an extension of waterbending.
Yeah.
So it's not like making firebending illegal to make bloodbending illegal. It's making this specific type of waterbending illegal that has been used for nefarious purposes, essentially. So they're
You could use making it for nefarious purposes illegal, but banning all bloodbending is what makes me nervous. I feel like that's like, well, I'm not this could word, be an but extreme. Like reverse discrimination. Oh, yeah.
Well, you could probably use it for healing.
Yeah, you probably could. Oh, that's interesting.
But we've never seen that.
I feel like this relates a lot to the Imperius Curse, though, because it's probably best that it's illegal. Because just imagine the control you could have over people. I'm sure...
But Imperius Curse controls the way you think.
Well, I was about to go there, though. I was about to say, there might be... in my theorized world right here, where I'm watching Korra for the first time, someone that could control thoughts or something like equivalent to that. I feel like that there's no limit to it because you're controlling blood flow and that does a lot. I don't know. Maybe it's too much. But I thought that it was fine. Like I was okay with it being illegal here. And I didn't understand like your really big opposition, Ariana, to like what was going on here and Karen. I get it that maybe police should use it. I think I've learned my lessons from Imperius Curse that even just the control of another human being is just it's a forbidden curse. It's unforgivable. So I'm totally okay with it like not being around. I think it's creepy as all hell. And the less that people use it, the better probably.
I just think that people who can use it should be able to be trained to use it properly. Because then without any training, this is what you get. You get crazy people. Who are like, well, I guess I can use it underground in secret.
Yeah, I think it's a fine line. And I think that it plays on that whole idea of discrimination and stuff. But at the same time, I understand why it's so frightening and why they would like to make it illegal. So I'm hoping, as terrible as it sounds, that we see more of this just so we can figure out more of like how bloodbending works and if it's possible to use it in a way that doesn't like... twist people's body parts around, because that was really gross.
Speaking of, well, one more point. But when you make it illegal, that means that nobody, even the good guys, aren't allowed to like study it and come to understand it. And if somebody had been there who understood it, like Katara, the only person who's been known to like not only be able to do it but break free from it, then if she had been there, I don't understand why she wasn't. But if she had been there, like, she could have broken free from him and stopped him. But because they don't allow anybody to learn how to use it, or I don't understand why she's not there. I don't know why she's so useless right now. It just makes no, like, why would you have a bloodbender there and nobody who can stop the bloodbender?
Well, if you think about it, though, we have canon that you're not meant to be doing bloodbending past a full moon, which this is confirmed as not being a full moon.
But they said he could do it. They're like, well, he can probably do it.
Well, Katara couldn't fight that. She wouldn't be able to do anything special other than just her normal waterbending.
No, but her breaking free, like she broke free from the other lady.
During a full moon, because she could bloodbend herself.
Yeah, but she broke free. Like,
right, like I thought she was bloodbending to break free. Like she bloodbent Hama to break free. That's how she did it.
You're probably right.
No, it's okay. I'm happy having your theories too, because it's not like confirmed either way. I agree.
I guess I'm just like still so mad though that she wasn't involved, like that she wasn't involved in this, because she's obviously the one with the most knowledge.
Yeah, I don't know. She's probably
in the South Pole. Yeah, with the kids.
Yeah. Maybe she's teaching someone waterbedding that's really important and needs to know it and couldn't escape. I don't know. I'm sure she has something that really important is going on, too. I don't think she's just, I don't know, Caitlin, what, fridged, as we maybe could say here. You know, you like that term from that article you wrote that was awesome one day.
Fridging involves being murdered, so we know Qatar is alive. She outlives almost everybody, so.
Yeah. Benched, I guess we can say then.
Benched, yes, I would give it. She seems to have been benched off in the South Pole with the kitties.
There's another gang member missing here. Arguably two.
Well,
I'm not going to mention them unless you guys want
to
bring it up.
Zuko is missing, but I feel like this isn't it's not necessary for Zuko to be there.
He's probably off ruling the fire.
Yeah. He's like doing his job. But I feel like this should be Katara's job, dealing with this evil bloodbender.
What about Dead Suki? Where is she?
Who cares? Like, I mean, she's fine. But this isn't, I'm saying this isn't relevant to her. In this instance, it's not relevant to her.
Right, but you're not concerned with, like
even Sokka is not necessary in this scene. It's just delightful to see him. But Aang is necessary, and I feel like Katara was necessary, and she wasn't there.
Didn't we have Sokka Suki at the end? And then she's just not there?
I mean, she can be at home with the kids. I don't care. I'm saying in this instance, she wasn't necessary.
Okay, I was looking at it when I was watching this, but I was upset that I didn't see the gang all together because I needed to see them all together, and I don't care what excuse they had to come up with for it. But I get where you're coming from, that this is whoever was needed for the danger of the situation and or the legality of it all needed to be there.
All right, so the flashback ends with Yakone bloodbends everybody after he is sentenced to life in prison, and he's like, not happening, peace out, bloodbends everybody. Aang does the whole Avatar state thing and stops Yakone and takes away his bending, which we saw him do at the end of Aala, so we know he's got the turtle magic still going on. So what do we think of that as the way to take out Yakone? Makes sense.
It does. Overkill. I mean, it still makes me sad. I'm not going to lie. I think that it's a terrible thing to take somebody's powers away. But the dude was crazy. So maybe it's a good idea.
There was due process. So.
Aang always had the same chances.
So wasted his chances. And there was really nothing else to be done for that. So do we think that...
He doesn't get a break. He has all these moral conflicts that he has to do. Taking away someone's bending is such a big deal, you know? And I don't know that I would want to have that power. Amon seems to like it, but Aang is just, not into it. He's just, you can tell it's, a struggle for him to get to that point. And when he does it, he's just fine, you made me do it.
So do the newbies think the only part of the message that's really important is Yakone himself, or do we think there are other parts of this flashback that are going to play into how the season wraps up? Karen?
I'm sitting here trying to remember the entire flashback going, is there something I missed? Because I'm not so sure, but... I don't know. I mean, now that you said that.
Well, we have a villain who's taking away people's bending, and Aang took away Yakone's bending, so we've got still some parallels going on
between
the past and the present.
That would probably upset someone.
Yeah, I mean, I feel I already said in my theory that Yakone is Amon. I don't know. What's the leading question here?
Well, I guess I was just wondering if there was anything else we thought that might be significant, or if we're good on that.
Well, Adriana, then, if you think Yakone is Amon, you're of the mind then that he's chi blocking, not necessarily.
No, I already said what I thought. I thought it was the turtle magic that he has.
Oh, the transfer of the turtle magic.
Him. Yeah.
Okay. No, I think I just kind of forgot that because that's new to me.
Well, are we good on the flashback then? We felt all our feels.
Ugh, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the episode ends. We've already kind of talked about who we think Amon might be. So he shows up at the house after Tarlok. Well, Tarlok comes and they confront him. And that's fun stuff. So what do we think's going on in there? Do we have thoughts about Tarlok and that confrontation?
I, like, don't remember this part.
That's the whole council and...
Oh, and then they take him out? And they're, wait, what?
Tarlok comes in and is like, they're like, you took her!
Yes.
And then he bloodbended them.
And then he bloodbended them.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and knocked them out. Because he's Jakon's son. Right?
Right. Correct. And then he flees back to the house. And more chaos ensues when Amon shows up and takes away Tarlok's bending. Do we feel bad for Tarlok at all?
No.
Yes, a little bit.
That's because you're a good person, Karen.
I mean, like, I definitely don't like the guy, don't get me wrong, but it's just so sad.
So even
the way he thumps on the ground, it's so final.
Yeah.
Karen feels bad for evil people, I guess that's our takeaway.
Bad taste in media and feels bad for bad people.
This is a recurring theme for me, so it does make sense.
At least we know your character flaws.
But interestingly, Amon doesn't just leave Tarlok in the cabin. He takes him. Where do you think he's taking him? Or why do we think he's taking him? Any thoughts?
Well, if he's that one dude, then maybe he
then
feels
because
bad.
Because it's his son.
Right.
That's what I thought.
Or maybe because he's a council member, he's going to find a way to either hold him for ransom or control him.
Nobody cares about him anymore.
I mean,
I don't know. True. I feel,
to be honest, he has his own followers. Like, as flawed as they are, I think people do care about him. He put a good face for a while, even if we knew he was a jerk the entire time.
Like, even the strength of those metal benders still follow him. Like, the ones that are, I suppose, still following orders underneath the new chief of police. So I think that's big enough power that Amon would still have an interest in doing something with.
So he's worth more as a captive than just left out to freeze in the snow.
I mean, that would be cool, too. I'm not sure what degree slime freezes at, but...
Don't know what the freezing point of his slime bending is. He's no longer a slime bender because he can't bend. Alas.
He bends Nickelodeon slime. We should test that out then, see when it freezes.
So whatever Amon wants with Tarlok, that's something to keep an eye on. And then Korra escapes when the Equalists try to take her as well. She flees and Naga finds her. Are we happy Naga found her?
Yes, that was really adorable.
I don't like that dog. It's weird.
What?
It's weird shaped.
I mean,
it has a little head and a giant body, and that creeps me out.
Yeah, I get confused looking at her sometimes, but, you know.
She's a polar bear dog.
I know, it's weird.
yeah, that's definitely an interesting mix.
And Naga brings Korra home, and Mako smothers Korra, which Ariana is not happy about. And neither is me. Nobody's happy about at this point. Especially
Mako, just go home. Just go home, Mako.
And that pretty much finishes this episode. Do we have any more feels about this episode before we move on to scenes and lines?
No, I'm just like really angry right now.
Oh, also, I think it's of note, too, to say that how cool is it that Korra thought to hold her band over her, hold it, you know, so she wouldn't get electrocuted. I never would have thought of something so smart. I think that was really intuitive of her, and it was a really cool moment of, like, how, like, I don't know, a character's, like, costume can actually come in handy and not just be, like, a decoration, but, you know, something they use that's kind of handy. Atla's always done that, too.
Good. I'm glad, because I hate Korra's costume. I hate it. I hate how she has, like, that sweater always wrapped around her waist, like the fifth grade thing that you do, like, during PE. It just bothers me so much.
Like, that's a lot thicker of a material rather than, like, an armband. You know, that's what I would have used. But, hey, whatever works. She got out.
Let's just give her props for being smart and thinking on the spot, because she thinks of that within seconds of hearing, electrocute the cage.
Well, I would have thought that still would have electrocuted her, because...
She did get electrocuted. It was just not nearly as...
Oh, okay.
...severe as it would have been if she had her body touching metal.
Right. Okay.
So it wasn't enough to knock her out. It caused pain, but it didn't render her unconscious.
Oh, she got so beaten up in this episode. I'm sure they had some good waterbender healers. Thank God we have that in this universe. I'd be so sad if not, because everyone would be, like, crippled forever.
Yeah, she had it rough. All right, so shall we move on to favorite scenes? Karen, do you want to start?
Sure. Let me find it. Okay, so, oh yeah. My favorite scene was definitely when Lynn zips Bolin's fly, because that was hilarious.
And his face.
Yeah.
Oh, he had a look on his face that I think described the moment perfectly for what it was, because I'm a male and that would be unpleasant. That's the most I'll say there.
Ariana?
Mine is definitely every time Lynn used her powers. She's just, like, the coolest. And I love her so much.
It's just a Lynn appreciation episode.
Yes. Oh, like the foot stomping thing. Oh, but also my favorite is when she, like, slaps Tenzin awake and she's like, Tenzin, wake up!
That was a good Lynn voice.
I love how, even though they're not together, she, like, still wears the pants in the relationship.
Be able to with it together. I feel like in these scenes, like, I still feel like the sparks so much that it's more than just, like, friends. I don't know.
We can talk about that next episode.
Yes. Oh my god. Okay. So mine is when Aang's not dead for just the slightest time, because dead Aang equals crying Mitch.
All the feels. Mitch is
even alive Aang sometimes is crying Mitch. There's just no crying. There's no happy Mitch. So it's just this series results in me just being like a blubbery baby so frequently. It's horrible.
Aw, poor Mitch. So my favorite scenes were just all the, like, Aang using his air scooter to go after Yakone. Like, he doesn't find a more, like, mature, quote-unquote, way to do it. He's just on his air scooter, and just various other callbacks to them being kids, like the twinkle toes and Sokka bringing up his boomerang, like... The more things change, the more they stay the same, and I love it.
Like an air skateboard or like an air bike.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, he just stays on his air scooter because he's Aang, and it's great. Yeah. All right, so favorite lines. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was from Sokka. It's been a long time since I've been able to say that. And he says, why, even metal bending was considered impossible for all of history until our esteemed chief of police, Toph Beifong, single-handedly developed the skill. And I like this for a lot of reasons. First of all, because it was Toph, it was Sokka saying it, and just the friendship between him and Toph, and also just Toph being...
You know they're banging now.
And just Toph being chief of police and all grown up and so badass, and I just loved it all.
Awesome. Ariana, favorite line?
Mine was Toph when she's seizing and she's like, fine, follow me, twinkle toes. Oh, I just love the callback.
Mitch?
Aman's line of, I told you not to underestimate her. Oh.
Because you shouldn't, because she's the Avatar.
I know. I love a good villain that, like, gives props to the protagonist and is just like, no, you're cool. Like, Voldemort was like, no, Harry Potter. But, like, he's all like, Korra, yes.
Good times. So mine was after everyone's been knocked out and they start waking up and Bolin kind of comes to and he's like, oh, man, I had this awful dream that Korra was taken by this evil bloodbender. So weird. And Asami goes, Bolin, that really happened. He knocked us out. And she's like, oh, my God.
She's
this
so
is, like, one of
it.
My favorite Asami moments. Just, like, she's so stoic. Like,
Yeah.
You're so dumb.
Her voice is so flat. She was like, I can't believe I actually have to explain this to him right now.
Yeah, her voice actress is so on par in that moment. I love it.
All right. So let's move on to chapter 10, Turning the Tides. More intense. So in this chapter, Lynn has to babysit the love of her life's wife, which is fine, I'm sure, and not at all uncomfortable. Meanwhile, Asami finally realizes that she's dating an a less emotionally aware version of Channing Tatum. But everything changes when the Equalists attack. Pema goes into labor because she's useless, and Tenzin's kids save Lynn by fart-bending their way to victory. Gora escapes the island with her friends, who have thus far been less helpful than the farting five-year-old. In the end, Lynn, this perfect Shakespearean sonnet of a woman, sacrifices herself for family and righteousness. But let's not freak out yet. Everything will be fine. The spawn of Zuko has arrived. And let's just say that I don't think it's a spoiler to say that he is the spawn of Zuko's spawn. Iroh Zuko's grandson.
I feel like that is a spoiler, Caitlin, because I had totally like my Zutara love child theory going.
Oh. Now,
but now I guess it's over. So
he could be the child of your
of Zutara's,
your ships.
Of Zutara's love child.
That means that Katara would have had him when she was like 60.
I mean, it happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
We not frequently,
I don't know.
But
we're in a magic universe.
I mean, I feel like his age was ambiguous.
Okay. Well, we're just going to put it out there. He's Zuko's grandson.
Okay.
So, this episode, we start off, Ariana is just wanting to ream on Mako because he sucks, basically.
That was,
and Brittany
that
agrees.
Was Brittany, yeah. Brittany says, but seriously, can she realize that Mako sucks already? Her pouting is making me like her less and less longer it goes on. You're a grown-ass woman who is better than everyone. That's funny, because her pouting does not make me like her less. It makes me like her more, because I feel like she should get angry. I really liked her when she was passive-aggressive and mean to him, because he's dumb, and she should just dump him.
I totally agree with that. And the fact that she gets mad at Mako and not Korra
yes,
makes me
yes.
love her even more because yes. so many times in television shows and movies, you have the girls going against each other when it's like, dude, the problem is the guy.
Yeah.
Why are you mad at the guy? And she is. And she actually says, I actually really like Korra. And I'm like, thank you for
and Korra
just being
isn't,
awesome.
Like trying to steal him from her. No. She's like trying to get along and be cool.
And she
I
has.
Thought, I thought at
feelings.
First she was.
Well, she has feelings for him, and I think that she's responding to his attention, which is fair because she does like
okay.
him. But yeah. she's not actively trying to steal her away from or steal him away from Asami. Mako is the one that cannot make up his mind, and I get that he likes both of them, which is totally fine. You're allowed to like more than one person, but the problem is you can't act on those feelings, and he's being very touchy with her, with Korra. And I just feel like, of course Asami's going to get pissed off. What were you expecting?
All right. So continuing the theme of lady problems, because that apparently is a thing that's going on. We also have Tenzin asking Lynn to hang out with Pema and the kids while he goes off and does important council things. Cause...
So awkward.
I know. So Lynn gets stuck, and Pema is a little like, here, please take my child and give him a bath because
I
you're
know.
My husband's ex-girlfriend.
Such a bitch. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
For real.
I didn't have a problem with Pema up until this episode. Like, I know we were joking about her being, like, homewrecking whore, and, like, yeah, I get where that's coming from, and I'm really curious, like, how that actually played out. But she was being... super mean when she did that. Like, she knew exactly what she was doing, and her voice gave away like that sarcasm, and I was just like, wow, you're married to the guy, you literally have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, like, you won, okay?
Yeah.
You don't need to like be a sore winner here.
Exactly.
It makes me feel like she doesn't even deserve him because of how jealous she visibly is.
She doesn't deserve him, obviously.
God, this show.
Oh,
and it's
well,
love
this,
stuff.
This brings me up, though. I was, like, watching this, and I was thinking, this is so funny, because I feel like Lynn and Pema are, like, opposing sides of Katara. Like, they both remind me of Katara, but, like, Pema is, like, the really annoying, awful side that we hate, like, the water scroll stealing side. And Lynn is, like, the badass, like, I'll save you, Zuko side.
I wonder what role Katara had in rising up Lin, if any.
Well, obviously, like, Aang really liked her, probably because she liked that she was bossy. He likes bossy
women. I'm sure Katara had some influence there.
Well, does anyone just want to appreciate Lin for putting up with everything?
She's so good. She's better than everybody else.
She's still a hero at the end of the day. Like, she deals with so much shit.
And she didn't even complain.
No.
She went and watched that kid, and she did it.
Yeah.
And she's like, of course, my dear friend. Like, oh, geez, stop it.
Those feels.
All right, so this episode is mostly just a whole bunch of action with the city is under attack. Everything changes when the Equalists attack. So the council members are attacked. We see the Fire Nation's councilwoman attacked in her home. She's targeted in her home, the poor woman. And Tarlok has already been taken. So then we see Tenzin gets targeted and he defeats the initial burst of people, but then it gets more intense. But it's okay because Team Avatar is on the scene and we get some awesome fighting. So how are we feeling about Team Avatar working together again and teaming up with Tenzin?
I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bitter that, and I don't remember exactly which moment this was, but they're like, yeah, we're the new Team Avatar and blah, blah, blah. That just kind of bothers me because it feels like a replacement. But other than that, I think it's awesome when they work together.
And it reminded me too of the Agni Kai scene from where the camera would cut really far away and we would have like blasts of fire and or water coming out. And it just looked so beautiful. And it reminded me of that moment, very artistically. I think it was meant to, because it was meant to show like, just the power of bending and just like how amazing it is. And just sometimes you need to take a step back and just realize that these are people, these are the teenagers doing these things, but like it has such a large impact on the world around them. And it gives me chills seeing them fighting those, big mech suits and, like all throwing their bending at them and just, they're so in sync. I do like it. I know they do feel a bit like they're trying to replace the last gang, but it's still fun.
All right, so we get the initial attack, and they fight them off, and they return to Air Temple Island, and they realize the attack is getting worse. So the idea is that they really need to split up because we got to protect the airbenders because there are not very many of them. So we also got to protect Korra, so everyone really needs to split up so Amon can't get everybody. So Lin goes with Tenzin's family to protect them. Team Avatar splits up and the White Lotus is left to fight off the Equalists too. And so we get a chase scene with airships and the Air Bison and Lin. Who wants to just talk about Lin?
I can't. I cannot talk about this.
I know. I have really hurt too many feelings. It's just like so emotional for so many reasons.
Moment of silence.
Like
silence
rolled up in a ball, crying. Like this is like the most devastating moment I've had, even all the way up to this. Like this hits it.
This episode destroyed me. I'm just because I feel like so invested in Lin and like Tenzin and his family, except for Pema the whore. But like those kids are so precious, and they like helped her, and even they're like, yeah, she's my dad's ex-girlfriend, but they like her still.
Yeah.
And
they understand
and she,
what
like,
that means.
She sacrifices herself for them because they're the last airbenders, and also because she's totally in love with him. But
where's the Lin Tenzin love child? That's what I want to know.
No, they didn't have a love child. That's why they couldn't get married, obviously, because she wanted to like be a badass and he needs kids.
God, Tenzin the Reader would have been such a better, like, world, universe, you know what I mean? Just, like, Hem on the side, God. Whatever.
So as emotional as this episode was, when they were talking about how they had to save him because, you know, there aren't that many airbenders left, I lost it because I was thinking about Tenzin the Breeder, and I just could not stop laughing.
Yes,
I was like,
okay.
It's
See,
so
they wouldn't
true.
Have this problem if he had, like, 20 kids.
Like, what's stopping him? Like, there's so many air acolytes that are, like, his fangirls. He's like Justin Bieber to them. Whatever.
What's stopping him? That he's married Midge. That's what's stopping him.
I guess. I wish that there was more sense to the fact that he just really
that
needs
that was
to
a precious scene, though, when they were, like, she had the baby, and they were all there. Those kids are so cute.
How long was Pema in labor for? Like, that did not seem to take very
like
long.
Like, 30 minutes.
Baby's coming. Like,
that was, like, the shortest.
You know, it's her fourth kid. She's a pro now at it. She's like, you know, they just
they
pop right out now.
Yeah. Can we talk about the fact that this is also the second time we've seen someone's water break on Korra, or Atla, you know, that is? Not, like, physically,
yeah,
but
whenever,
like, the moment.
If you're ever having, like, trouble and you, like, really want to go into labor, you should just, like, have the end of the world start or something, because that's really going to speed things up.
Like a giant dragon after you, or Equalus exploding your city, whatever.
Yeah.
So, rewinding back a little bit, how did we feel about the air kids coming in to fight and help Lin?
Fartbending.
So great.
All
yes.
the fartbender.
I was like, okay, this is when you can tell it's a kid's show. Like, kids are going to find this really hilarious. I was sort of rolling my eyes. But aside from that, I was so happy that they helped and that they weren't just, like, shoved in the corner and, you know, oh, we got to protect the kids, that they were brave enough to take on those people who arguably could, like, totally do some damage. But they knew what they had to do and they were protecting Lin the whole time.
I know.
And it's funny, too, how, like, all the Equalists just sit around and just, like, taking it. They're like, if these kids can beat me up, like, kudos to them. Whatever. Just like, do it.
It goes to show that they're pretty competent airbenders, too. They know what they're doing. They're pretty young, and they know what they're doing.
They remind me a lot of Aang, because, like, Aang was like that, too. And I wonder if that's just, like, an airbending thing. Like, they're just, like, good at it. Younger.
I think Jinora is the same age as Aang was in that series. Yeah, I couldn't see her.
Well, no, she's 10. She's 10, but that's pretty close.
Yeah. Oh, that's even creepier that he's with Katara. Oh my god. But like, I love when Jinora and Iki come in and they just, like, you know, have their, like, I forget what they're called, the air gliders, and they just kind of, like, slice through the crowd. You know what I mean? It's just, it's so epic. I love that they have that power at a young age. We can only imagine what they're gonna be like when they're older.
I just realized that, like, Aang never got to meet them, that they were born after Aang died, which is really sad.
Yeah, they were.
I wonder if that's what happened, like, if Aang died and that was, like, the ticking clock for Tenzin. He was like, I really need to have some kids, like,
he was putting it
before
off.
I die and take the whole airbending with me.
I'm glad we're continuing the discussion of reproduction in the Avatar world.
I mean, like, we can't help
no,
it.
It's, I mean,
like,
it's relevant because I feel like it's relevant because in this episode, it was so obvious to me that, like, he's still in love with Lin. And I know we talked before about, like, is Lin, like, has she been able to let go of him? And I feel like in some ways, Lin has been, like, she has been able to move on, maybe because he hurt her so much. But I feel like he hasn't quite moved on. Like, in
I don't know if she's moved on as much as just accepted the situation. And whereas I feel like Tenzin still feels really guilty about the situation, and he's kind of harboring that, like maybe he won't admit to himself that he still cares about her. Whereas, like, she's definitely admitted that, and she's sort of like, well, this is my lot in life. I just have to make the best of it.
Oh, Lin. All the feels for Lin. So another thing that we see in this episode that's worth pointing out is we see Hiroshi, Asami's father, side by side with Amon in one of the battleships. And he's like, I want my daughter back. And Amon's like, we'll get her back for you. Like,
I don't even care about him. Who cares?
So do we think Asami is in trouble?
Probably.
I don't even want to follow them next episode. I feel like we're going to, but I don't care about them.
And I wish we had time to talk about all the action, but just the fact that Asami was able to still do more than, like, a lot of the benders just makes me so happy. She even gets kind of, like,
yeah,
shocked by one of the equalists, but she comes back. Like, she's such a trooper. That must have hurt a lot.
I want to clarify, too, because I know a couple of episodes ago when I was last on, I was like, ugh, I hate Asami so much. Definitely like Asami now. I do trust her, which is good. I don't know why she had to be such, like, a weird character to begin with, but I'm really holding out hope that we're not, like, getting tricked or anything, and that she continues to be as cool as she is, because, like I said, I really appreciated that she was getting mad at Mako and not at Korra, and I think it just, she's very level-headed, and we don't see a lot of the jealousy and a lot of the flaws that we see in the other characters that really make me kind of take pause and wonder, okay, you know, do I really like them, or am I kind of just annoyed with them right now? So hopefully she continues to be as cool as she has been.
Praise. Cool.
Caitlin, I think you and I are just going to smirk over here.
All right, so since this is mostly action, do the newbies have any theories about where we're going next? We've got pretty much all the good guys are split up.
Obviously, new Zuko is going to, like, save everybody. I'm so excited. That's my theory.
New Zuko.
New Zuko. Oh my gosh, guys. I, like, practically threw my computer, like, across the room. I was so excited. As soon as I heard Dante Bosco's voice, I was like, what is this?
You guys were like, you mentioned this almost last week, I think it was on Twitter. You were like, you have to watch episode 10. I was like, all right, I'll get to it eventually. Really wish I hadn't waited so long, because I was freaking out too.
It's such a fabulous reveal. The way they do it, General Iroh. It's like,
yeah, that was pretty much my exact same reaction, Mitch. Mm-hmm. Like that really big gasp of air. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was like trying to figure out who he was, but obviously now we know he's his grandson. So.
Oh yeah, you thought he was this entire love child. Oh.
Well, no, I mean, I was just kidding mostly, but I was like, is he his kid? So.
He's pretty young to be the kid.
I guess. That's it would right, be cool so. If he was like Tenzin's little half brother.
But Katara isn't anywhere, so how could she be having Zuko's kids if we don't even know where she is? She's benched.
I hope we meet, like, General Azula, too, while we're at it. That'd be fun.
We've got the whole Nation family
he
naming.
Could have been too, he could have been, like, Azula's kid. That would have been cool. I miss Azula so much.
Do we want Azula reproducing, really?
Yeah.
I know Ariana does. I don't.
She can be reformed, guys. She should have been reformed at the end of the other season, but...
Fair enough.
Comics.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of backstory we don't know yet.
Yes.
All right, so we think the army's going to come in and save the day. Because there is a military force for the United Forces.
Yeah, I wonder why they haven't, like, stepped in earlier. I guess because they were just in the city. But I do feel like this should have been more of a pressing problem.
The United Nations, United Forces. I think that's cool.
But I guess they start attacking your last airbenders, you definitely need to, like, bring in the big guns. There's another genocide.
And I love that this is that Amon has created this threat that allows the military to justify itself, like, coming in. That's so cool to me, because I'm like, you just had a vision and now you're making it come true, and it's such a big deal now. And, like, I like villains that can actually do something like this, that aren't just like a one-shot deal and like, I'm just after the protagonist. No, he's after, like, everyone ever with bending.
Yeah, I like intelligent villains. I think that's really important for a story. If they're just all, like, brute force, it doesn't really do anything. But ones that can evade and can strategize, I think just, like, really up the game in terms of the storytelling.
Well, can I just say then that also I find myself still questioning a lot of what's happening, like, what's Amon's, like, I don't know, what's his stock in what's going on here, or what's his end goal? And I always find myself, like, having to think really hard to, like, connect it all, even though I know who he is, of course, and, like, I've seen the whole thing. He is one of the most intelligent villains I've ever watched on TV for that fact. I still can't figure out a lot of what he does, but when you get it, it's just, it'll click and you'll feel so happy.
All right. Do we have any more feels to feel for this episode? It was mostly action, so.
I just think that Brittany's gif that she put in here of, like, Kermit freaking out is perfect response to the whole General Iroh thing, so.
Oh, yeah. What an awesome moment, for real. Like, if that didn't make you want to watch the next two episodes, I don't know what would.
True story. So, favorite scenes? Should we move on?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Karen, what's your favorite scene?
Mine was a really small moment, but it just made me laugh when Asami and Mako are beginning to argue in the kitchen, and Pema's like, yeah, I'm just going to leave you guys alone. And right as she goes out of frame of the camera, she has this, like, she gets big eyes like this, oh my God, I need to get out of here look on her face. And I just thought it was so funny. I love the expressiveness of Korra. I think they do a really good job with it.
Also, definitely. Milo's face when he's fighting. Emotion.
Yeah.
Like his boogers flying out of his nose. I know, yeah.
Good stuff. Ariana, favorite scene?
Okay, how cool was it when, like, Lynn, like, took down two battleships single-handedly? She's one lady. She took down two battleships. She's just, like, ripping it apart with her bare hands because she can.
Just like her mama.
Yeah, just like her mama.
Oh, she is, yeah.
She's her mother's daughter in so many ways.
Yeah.
And it makes me so happy.
All right, Mitch.
Another Lynn moment. It's when the rain's falling around, the broken Lynn. She's had her bending taken away, and my tears were so bent in this scene. You don't even know. You do not even know.
I know. They're destroying a legacy.
What's really amazing, too, is that she... He offers her the chance to give up Korra to save her bending, and when they first met,
oh no,
you know,
I can't.
She and Korra were just headbutting, could not stand each other, and now Lynn is giving up
she
this
can't
core
do that.
Part of herself,
yeah.
to protect Korra. Like, it's really.
But she would, like, do that for anybody because she's so great.
Yeah, I mean, she's so noble, and I know that she's so gruff sometimes, but her heart is always in the right place, and there was no question. I knew that she wasn't going to give up anything.
I often think that, like, Lynn is, like, the shining gem of Korra. She's the most developed and intricate character that I've ever
seen
in the show. She's so fascinating.
She's so complicated. And
yeah. Because you think she's a one-hit beat when you first see her, and she's, like, just the mean cop, but then you see all of this other stuff happening. It'll hit you real hard.
Like, she knew she was going to lose her bending as soon as she left that thing. But
oh, yeah.
She did it anyway. Mm-hmm.
I wish she would have just gone down with maybe, like, a little bit more of a fight. Like, I don't know how, but just something. Like, I wish that she had, like, a little spike of metal she could have just, like, killed everyone with. I don't know. Kind of like in Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, where he, like, kills everyone with that pen.
All right. So my favorite scene was General Iroh, and when he opens his mouth and Dante Basco's voice comes out, you're like, oh my God. So Zuko returns, sort of.
Yeah.
So.
Your voice hasn't aged a day.
It's true. I always think, like, I love that they brought Dante Basco back to voice Iroh, but, like, his voice just sounds weird coming out of that mouth to me.
I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, I really love the throwback, but I can't not think of Zuko when I hear his voice.
And his voice just, it sounds young because you're so used to him voicing the teenager. And then Iroh is, like, I don't know, in his 30s or something. So it seems... It feels weird to me, but I'm just going to appreciate the Zuko throwback no matter what. So, favorite lines, Karen?
When Lynn says, whatever happens to me, don't turn back. And she looks at Pema and all the kids and Tenzin, and she's sacrificing herself for these people that in a lot of ways, I think, like, changed the course of her life, because I really do feel like she and Tenzin were very much in love and were very close, and something happened to kind of just put her on a different course. And she's literally giving up everything for them, and I can't.
I know, like, those could have been her kids.
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, and then his face when he's just like, wait, what are you doing?
It's intense.
It kind of reminds me, too, once again, of like...
my line perfectly.
Go ahead.
After she sacrificed herself and everyone's just standing there like, open mouth, like, I cannot believe that just happened. And Milo's like, that lady is my hero. And then Tenzin's like, yes, she is.
I was about to say that
this
reminds me of...
How could he not be in love with her? Of course he's in love with her. She's, like, the coolest human ever.
She is. And, like, she's like her mother's daughter once again, too, from when Sokka's kind of holding on tough as they're falling off the airship, you know, and it's, like, the death thing. It's just, this is it. We're gone. And it hit me right there. That's what this whole moment felt like all over again. So horrible.
All the feels. All right, Mitch, favorite line.
Yeah, mine's just, it's kind of a cute one. I'll lighten it up, right? That's not what I signed on for. Well, it's when she's holding Milo by the string, because he's all gross from having to poo really bad.
good times. And mine
Emma
was...
did that because she came out and she saw them together and she was like, She's like, what are you two doing out here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, trying to save you. That's actually what we're doing out here. We're trying to save you.
Take my opportunity to give you my poopy child.
Yeah, like, she basically, like, shits on her, and then she saves her life. What the heck? Come on, Emma is not a good person.
Alright, and my favorite line is when Lin is fighting the Equalists at the air temple and the kids come in and Jinora comes in first and she's, stay away from my dad's ex-girlfriend. Not stay away from Lin, stay away from my dad's ex-girlfriend.
Yes. That was so funny.
But props to the air kids for being awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right, any more feels to feel, or are we fueled out?
I think
I am so fueled out.
Okay. So just a reminder of how you can get in contact with us. Our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com. You can talk to Brittany at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Or there's always iTunes. We love when we get reviews on iTunes. And if you give us 5 stars, then Karen will hug you at Comic-Con.
Yes, I will. There's a bunch of us that are going to be there. And there's actually going to be some Korra stuff going on. So hopefully we'll be able to put up that information on Hypeable.
I'm going to try and go to the one on Saturday with Dante Bosco and Sokka. What's his name? Jack DeSena. Mm-hmm.
And there's rumor that there might be a new series announced, but Bryke has also announced that they don't want to do another show together right now.
Oh my gosh, please make it like the Lin and Tenzin series.
Or just the teenage like kid series. Like,
yes,
Aang,
the kids
Katara,
who are so much more interesting than Korra's friends.
Ugh. Right, like the previous generation right before Korra. I'd be game for that.
Totally.
Well, you can count on if there's anything exciting announced, you will find out about it on hypeable.com, where we all call home and get our news and write news and all that good stuff. So, listener feedback. We have a little bit of listener feedback this week. Ariana, do you want to take the one from Twitter?
Yes, this is from Amanda at Heyo Amanda. And she said, just finished watching this week's episode, and geez, the gang were attractive as grown-ups. Freaking Sokka, man. I agree, Amanda. They cleaned up nice.
It's true. Mitch, do you want to take the one from Hypeable?
Sure. So this hyperbole comment comes from Frederick Gugger, and they wrote, "I get all the technological development. However, I was surprised by the development of beach fashion. Greetings from Switzerland." Then they put a picture of Legend of Korra swimwear in 1920s. Asami has a one piece, and Mako has a top with trunks. Atlas swimwear 70 years later. Then we have Ty Lee in a top. Along, yeah, 70s early, excuse me. There's Tylee Azula and Mai in a bikini top, and then Zuku's not wearing a top at all. So it's a lot more.
It's because they're Fire Nation, and Fire Nation, they know how to dress sexy. That's why.
And plus, that was hashtag the beach. You cannot beat the sexiness of that episode.
Hashtag the beach. Oh, boy. All right. Well, that is pretty much the best note to end anything on. So I think we'll call it good from there. So until next week, when we are covering the last two episodes of book one of Korra, everybody get excited because it's going to be crazy.
I cannot.
So until then, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Karen.
I'm Ariana.
I'm Mitch.
And that was Brittany in the spirit world.
I thought I heard her.
And we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I love everyone here today. It's not like I don't love everyone else, but I love you guys like super.
I was like, what does that mean?
I can tolerate everybody else, but I really love everyone that's here. So, it's fantastic.